This time on Psychic Investigators. A young woman is abducted in broad daylight.
Where is she? Who has her?
Police think it could be murder.
There was blood on the handgun.
But no one knows for sure.
You could hear the buzzing before we saw the fly.
Until a psychic relives the crime.
That's when she leaped into my body. She was so terrified.
Will the psychic help to solve the mystery of what happened to the flower girl? On the outskirts of Dallas-Fort Worth, a university town. A town that likes to party, where booze and bars can sometimes mean trouble, like the trouble that erupted late afternoon, July 1st, 1996.
A girl that I know was kidnapped. Big white burly guy in a black late model Chevy pickup.
Yes.
I took off with her.
You'd get calls like this basically every weekend when the bars were open to 2 a.m. in the morning. The two witnesses, patrolmen, saw that both of them had been drinking and didn't believe what they said and thought possibly that it was just a domestic disturbance.
The witnesses know the woman they saw kidnapped. She's 36-year-old Diana Goldston, a local photographer who also makes extra money selling roses in the clubs and bars around Denton. People call her
a pretty
the flower
girl. For a pretty girl.
She would give her shirt off of her back to you if she felt you needed it more than she did.
Diana is also a part-time bartender at the Red Derby, the location of the abduction.
The owner of the Red Derby called and said that something had happened to my sister.
I got a call from my daughter. She said that Diana was taken from the street and kidnapped.
The witnesses gave the police the license plate number of the truck. They trace it to the address of Carrie Griffin, ex-wife of John Robert, J.R. Griffin, a known felon from California on parole.
Very, very strong, very muscular guy. He scared people.
A rookie detective is sent out to question J.R. Griffin's ex-wife. Carrie Griffin says that her ex-husband had been at the house on the day in question, and he had a woman with him. From Carrie's description, the detective assumes the woman is Diana Goldston.
Wrote in his report, she was with J.R. Griffin and appeared okay.
Satisfied that it may be a simple domestic dispute, the police put the case to one side. But it was not okay. 10 days go by, and still no word from Diana. Her mother desperately wants answers.
They weren't taking it seriously, and I said, she's missing, she's gone. Something's wrong. Please help me.
The police revisit the case, and Detective Dave Stewart is put in charge.
They'd already started it in motion, talked to a few people, but then when I came in, we started having to interview all the other witnesses.
Also assigned to the case, Detective Kenny Kirkland re-interviews Carrie Griffin. His experience tells him she knows more than she's saying.
Indeed, that was not the whole truth, that there was more to the story.
Kirkland gets her to admit that she was scared of her ex-husband and that the woman with JR wasn't Diana Goldston, but his girlfriend, Jeanette Cox.
That Jeanette Cox was there with him, that Diana Goldston was not, and that J.R. Griffin had blood on him.
The story Carrie Griffin tells breaks the case wide open.
Okay, sure, no problem.
Carrie Griffin says J.R. asked her neighbor for help. The truck was stuck at the lake. The lake is Lake Ray Roberts, a heavily wooded 6,000-acre state park just outside of Denton. What was J.R. doing up there? And why did he have blood on his shirt? The neighbor takes Kirkland to the spot where JR was stuck.
When we first walked up to the area, we could see a jacket hanging in a tree that had blood on it. We could see the trail where a body was dragged. You could hear the buzzing before we saw the flies. And the blowflies were just all on the top of it. They're also called death flies. There was a pool of blood and body fluids. There was lots of blood there.
The police bring in dogs trained at detecting human remains.
Cadaver dogs hit on that area that we were. They hit on the jacket.
They gather the evidence at Lake Ray Roberts and compare it to DNA from Diana Goldston.
We matched all of these things to the blood that was on the ground, to DNA that we had gathered from Diana Goldston's hair that she left in a brush at her house.
And it all matches.
We knew that that's where Diana had been before he moved her.
Even without her body, the police are now convinced the flower girl is dead.
I went out in my backyard and screamed and yelled and cried and talked to God, but it really didn't help. She was gone.
Warrants are issued. In J.R. Griffin's house, the police find a shotgun and a .38 revolver. Traces of blood are found on the revolver. In the pickup truck, the police also find trace elements of blood.
We were able to get DNA from that, which would match us up to Diana Goldston.
In the state of Texas, without a body, police cannot lay a murder charge. But they do have enough evidence to charge J.R. Griffin and his girlfriend, Jeanette Cox, with aggravated kidnapping. But where is Diana Goldston? And what exactly happened to her? All of Denton wants to know. The police drag the lake. There's a massive ground search.
It was very emotional for the whole town as well as the police department. We wanted justice, all of us did. We left no stone unturned.
And still, nothing. Weeks, then 3 months go by, and with JR and his girlfriend not talking, the police are at a dead end. A colleague suggests a psychic who had worked with police in a nearby county.
Police officers are cynical by nature, and we don't believe anything that anybody tells us, much less a psychic that tells you things from the dead or from other places.
Despite his skepticism, the detective gives the psychic a call.
He wanted to know if I would be willing to work on this young woman who was missing. And he said, would you be willing to come to Denton, Texas?
Carol Pate has worked with police around the U.S. on many cases. She uses a method she calls psychometry.
That's holding an object, a photograph. It's kind of like tuning in a radio station for me. Once I've got that signature frequency of that individual, then I can become one with them. So I'm sort of them for that time frame. Then I can see and feel and know.
But will the psychic be able to see what happened to the flower girl?
Pretty much floored all of us. We were shocked.
Hey, you! Where's my money?
A woman abducted outside a Texas bar has been missing for weeks, presumed dead. Police bring in psychic Carol Pate from her home in Arkansas. Can she see what the police cannot?
We were very frustrated, but we needed some closure for the family and for us in the police department.
In the squad room, the detectives put the psychic to the test.
We did not give Carol Pate any information whatsoever. We figured if she was truly who she said she was, that she would be able to do these things. We got together several pictures, and some of them were people not involved in the crime, and some were people involved in it. We had not released any of the pictures of people in the press.
So I did each photograph. The girl was scared to death. She was murdered.
All of us in the room were silent.
This one is the murderer. He was heavy into drugs and that he had zero conscience, none. This one is his girlfriend. And she was there at the time of the murder.
We were shocked for the fact that she was able to take just pictures and tell us what each person did and what their part was in that crime. She just reaffirmed that. I don't know of anybody that can do that.
What else can the psychic see? Without telling her anything, Detective Kirkland drives Carol to the scene of the abduction, the parking lot of the Red Derby Bar.
This young girl, I saw her in front of a nightclub, and she sold flowers. This was where I felt a lot of violence here. This was where the abduction took place. He believed this girl had stolen money from him.
Where's my money?
She was so terrified. And then that's when she leaped into my body. I was going through the struggle that she was going through. And all of a sudden, I'm shot.
She said she could feel it, just like as if she was Diana Goldston. I can feel the searing heat. I can feel that I'm bleeding. That is a possibility. The two witnesses, I remembered that they said a shot had been fired, but no one had said that Diana Goldston was shot. We were going down toward the lake. As we drove by one area, she said, this part here has something to do with Diana Goldston.
Still channeling the spirit of Diana, the psychic calls out directions as she claims to relive Diana Goldston's last moments.
She's bleeding heavily, and I look to the other side of me, and I see a woman, and I see a man to my left side, and these people are fighting her and holding her.
She said, I can feel what Diana Goldston feels. They're hitting me, and they're keeping me down, and I'm begging for my life.
And she said, turn to the right. Here, turn left.
She leads the detective to Lake Ray Roberts.
She said, this is where it occurred. This is where Diana Goldston lost her life. This lake is huge. Lake River Roberts is a big place. And to be able to narrow it down to one place. It's pretty astounding.
I feel the man and the girl taking her out of the truck. There's a jacket, and he takes it off, and he throws it on a limb in a tree.
Shocked that she was able to do that.
And I saw him dragging my body through the woods. And they just lay me down. And I guess they thought I was gonna just bleed to death there. And they walk away. And then I feel them coming back. And the man, he stomps my throat with his big boot. I die.
How could the psychic know so much? Carol Pate not only confirmed where police believe Diana Goldston died, but she offers insight into how she died.
I can't explain that.
Forensics have given some of the details in the case, but with J.R. Griffin and Jeanette Cox saying nothing, Carol Pate is the only one to paint a full picture of Diana's last moments alive.
Carol left me some drawings that depicted where she believed Diana Goldston had been taken and laid down a final resting place.
There was some graffiti close to a bridge, and the graffiti, that was done like in red, that S was like in red. And there was a cross and then that Y, and there was this barrel, and I felt like she at one point was placed either in the barrel or around this barrel. Basically, when I draw these pictures, it's what I'm seeing in my head, what the picture that flashes in my head, period. And I try to transpose that picture in my head onto the piece of paper. And I try to get as much detail as possible.
But 5 months after the Flower Girl's abduction, there's still no sign of Diana's body. The trial of J.R. Griffin begins. He pleads not guilty.
He believed that the police could not touch him, that he was invincible, that nobody could get him. Everything that we gathered together was a circumstantial case, but it was a good enough case because we'd pieced it together.
Leanne Breeding is the prosecutor.
Our goal was to get him convicted and have him spend as much time in the penitentiary as the law allowed. Without a body, it's hard to prove an exact cause of death that stands up on appeal. And so you take the route where you think you have the better case for the evidence, and in this case, it was the aggravated kidnapping.
To the end, J.R. Griffin maintains his innocence, but the jury finds him guilty, and he's sentenced to 40 years.
In Texas, juries decide the punishment, and for him to be sentenced to life imprisonment on an aggravated kidnapping case, that's the most he could get.
You know, instead of being just this flower girl that he swatted away, suddenly now she was important to the jury, and it was this one person he wasn't even afraid of and thought couldn't do anything that put him behind bars permanently.
We asked him again if he would just tell us where she was, that we would not pursue murder charges and he could not get the death penalty in the state of Texas. We wanted to find the body of Diana Goldston to add some closure to her family. And his response to myself and David Stewart at that time was that you'll never find the body of Diana Goldston.
With J.R. Griffin in prison and his girlfriend Jeanette Cox saying nothing while she awaits her trial, the police have only the visions of a psychic to explain how Diana died. But that was about to change.
I remembered what Carol Pate told me. I remembered it all. It indeed did come to be true.
In Denton, Texas, J.R. Griffin has been found guilty of the abduction of Diana Goldston. The police are sure she's dead, but J.R. won't reveal what happened or where her body is.
So about 3 o'clock, I wrote J.R. a letter while he was in prison to tell me what he did with Diana, and he wrote me an 11-page letter back, kind of called me a bunch of names, and keeps denying it. He won't talk about it. He keeps saying it's somebody else that did it.
I think J.R. Griffin is one of the most evil men you would ever meet. Any man that has the ability to put closure for a family, and he just totally ignores them, he's evil.
I even wrote to Griffin in prison. In his letters to me, he said, I'll probably die in here, and I thought, good. He denied everything, saying his friend Cox knew more than she was telling.
Then, 2 years after the abduction, an unexpected development and the mystery of how Diana died is finally solved. In exchange for a reduced sentence and no trial, Griffin's accomplice talks.
Jeanette told us everything that we didn't know because she was actually there. And she gave details that only a person that was present would know what happened.
So he was wanting to go to Denton, and told me he had quite some money. And he just a couple days beforehand, he mentioned about someone stealing his wallet.
Hey, you! Where's my money?
JR killed the wrong person. because it was all over $400 that someone had taken out of his wallet. It wasn't Diane that stole the money, but she died as a result of something else that somebody else did.
Diana Goldston had never done anything to J.R. Griffin. She died for nothing.
And he just yanked her up and started shoving her towards the truck. At that time, I hear the gun go off. And I'm very scared. And he says, get her in the truck.
Get her in there. And my reaction was just that I've heard this before from Carol.
Shot.
All I can't remember anymore of the trip because I'm struggling with her to keep her down. He's telling me to keep her down. I punched her once or twice, maybe three times.
I'd heard this also from Carol Pate. She told me this is what happened.
And then when he got to the lake where he dumped her,
I helped him lift her legs up. She's still breathing. I was walking back to the truck, and out the corner of my eye, I see him drag her up further under the tree area, and it looked like he'd stepped on her neck. Just kind of smashed it like a cigarette butt. And I acted like I didn't see him. I was afraid.
What this does, it sets the wheels in motion. If we ever find Diana,
J.R. Griffin can and most likely will be tried for murder and be put to death.
But can she tell the police where to find Diana's body and seal J.R. Griffin's fate?
Do you have any idea where she may be?
No.
For making the deal, Jeanette Cox receives a sentence of 20 years in prison. Eerily, Jeanette's account closely mirrors the psychic's visions of the crime. And what about Carol Pate's drawings of Diana's burial place? Detective Kenny Kirkland is hopeful.
Carol Pate had gotten several things right in dealing with this case. And so I've kept those drawings so when we do find the body, I want to be able to compare it to what Carol drew on this paper.
It is probably one of the harder things to do is to locate a body because that energy is dead. The physical energy is dead. So I'm having to pick up on the remnants of what was there psychically.
Carol Pate obviously has some special gifts to be able to do things that a normal person cannot do. She was able to tell us things about this case she knew nothing about. It was pretty phenomenal that she was able to do that.
For Detective Dave Stewart, the case never closed.
I need to find Diane before I retire. That is my one goal in life, I hope, as an officer, is to put this case to rest.
I would love for my mother and my daughter and me to have a place to go and pay our respects to her. That would be amazing.
I wanted a body, you know, I wanted a funeral. I wanted a place that I could go talk to her instead of her picture.
I feel Diana will eventually be found given time. I know that the family needs closure. They need to be able to say goodbye. And who knows, maybe I'll have a part in it.